Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He joins us every Monday in the 12 o'clock hour. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Guy, before we start talking about the Fed cutting rates, there's this whole discourse about whether or not President Trump can fire Jerome Powell. If you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, explain how this actually works to become the Fed chair.
Certainly. First, short answer is no. Donald Trump cannot fire Jerome Powell. He has two more years on his term as chairman. And the Fed is designed to be independent of politics. So incoming presidents get to appoint Fed members when their terms expire. And the term for the chairman expires in 2 years. So in 2 years, he could not appoint him as chairman and appoint someone else. But for the next 2 years, Jerome Powell is chairman as long as he wants to stay.
And it is actually the Fed chairs who vote on that position?
No, all the Fed, the president appoints the chair. So the president does get to appoint the chairman. And that's a decision he can make. But there's a term. Okay. So he has 2 years left. And it's better for the economy to have a stable Federal Reserve. The Fed is supposed to be independent of politics. And that's really a good thing for the economy, because every president would want to have their stamp on the Fed. And they get to do it over time, but not dramatically overnight. People would lose confidence in the dollar if they felt that the president could manipulate the Fed.
And the Board of Governors of the respective Federal Reserve banks throughout the country, I forgot how many there are, those are appointed by the president as well, right?
They are. And the governors, you know, have staggered terms as well, and they have rotating terms on the Federal Open Market Committee. So it's designed to have stability and designed to be immune from politics, at least in the short run. And, I mean, once again, it's a good system. You really don't want a Federal Reserve that doesn't seem to have a long-term view of economic policy. And this goes both ways. I mean, President Clinton was mad at the Fed. President Obama was mad at the Fed. President Bush was mad at the Fed. Trump was mad at the Fed last time. Politicians don't like being told no, and sometimes the Fed has to do that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of the reading right now, it's almost as though that this friction between a president or president-elect and the Fed chair is an anomaly. And as I think back in history, you would know better than me, this is really more common than one would think.
Oh, absolutely. And if you think about it, it's very understandable. If you're the president, you want the economy to be strong, you want rates to be low, you want growth to be solid, and so does the Fed. But sometimes you can't have low rates and a solid economy. Paul Volcker raised rates to just horrible levels and triggered a deep, deep recession in order to break the back of inflation. You know, many people of the older listeners remember when mortgage rates were in the 12, 13, 14% range. And Volcker said, we just have to break the back of this. And the price was a deep recession. It was deeply unpopular with politicians, understandably so, but it was something that had to be done to end the inflation.
I remember a low interest home mortgage loan at 12.8% interest. I was singing zippity doo-dah.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days when you'd have bond programs and people lined up overnight trying to get a bond loan. I mean, you know, people
would exactly what I
remember
did.
That, the younger. Yeah, and well worth it.
Yeah. Well, I think the going rate at the time was about, I don't know, 14, 15%. It had just dropped down from 17, if my memory serves me correct.
Oh, yeah. And the prime got to 21.5. I mean, it was incredibly difficult.
So let's talk about the most recent Fed cut. For whatever reason, this seems to be a little controversial as well.
Yeah, we're entering a different period. The Fed statement was significantly different. Last cut was 50 basis points. This cut was 25 basis points. There were some Fed governors that suggested maybe they don't cut at all. And the commentary was important because what they said was, we feel that there is a balance between the risk of higher unemployment and the risk of inflation. We feel that those two are now in balance. And the Fed, as everyone remembers, or most people remember, has a dual mandate to keep employment as low as possible, unemployment as low as possible, and to have inflation at 2%. So the Fed is now saying, we think we're pretty close on both. Now, what this means is that they will be going much more slowly for future rate decreases. And they're saying, we're going to watch the data. There could be another 25 basis points this year, but maybe not. And they also said, this is going to be dependent on domestic events and international events, recognizing that we're in a very unstable time right now. And, you know, there's more foreign instability than we've seen in a long, long time. And the Fed recognizes that, you know, that could cause a supply crunch. It could cause, you know, all kinds of trouble. So they're saying at this point, we're in balance. We're not likely to drop rates dramatically. And, you know, we feel like the unemployment now 4.1% compared to 3.8 is about where it needs to be. Inflation is 2.1 compared to 2. It's about where it needs to be. And we're just going to wait for the next set of data to see where we go.
How much of this is uncertainty? You know, a lot of times perception is reality. There are those that are writing that, you know, this was a very cautionary move, and it's really more about uncertainty, new administration coming in, although I think this decision was made before the election outcome, right? But they felt even more comfortable because of what happened on November 5th.
Yeah, and no one really knows where we're going right now with the next administration. You know, we have policies, and all the policies that are promoted during an election campaign don't always get implemented. So it's premature to talk about what the economic policies are. We think we have a general outline. It's also a little premature. If the Democrats hold on to the House, that will change the dynamic. So we'll probably need to wait one more week to know how that goes. But the future is uncertain. And I remember a famous economist said, you know, predictions are difficult, particularly involving the future. Well, yes, they are.
Never mind. No, exactly. What do you think? You know, so we're now in this kind of lame duck period, right? And the market has reacted to a bunch of different things. And I know we oftentimes talk about really the market is not an in, an indicator of a lot of different things in the economy. But do you see anything in the short term as a result of November 5th that kind of sticks out for you?
Yeah, I think the biggest reason for the market recovery is excessive regulation is a cost. It raises inflation, it reduces corporate profits, and at a certain point, it's really counterproductive. You know, if you think, do we really need a number of new regulations or things that need to be regulated? And the market was reacting to, there will be new heads of the SEC, and the people on Wall Street were not fond of the current administration's head of the SEC. So they're really pretty happy that, there will be a change. They also weren't particularly happy with the Justice Department suing a lot of the big companies and delaying mergers. You know, they felt like they had gotten too far into pressuring companies to do things that were counterproductive. So that's why you saw that giant recovery where people are saying, this is wonderful, we'll have less regulation. It wasn't as much about, you know, voting for someone at the top of the ticket about, but it, as much as it was about getting rid of some of the regulators that the financial markets feel like have gone too far, including the CFPB.
Is there a feeling of concern of what a lame duck president does between now and January 20th that may have an impact on the economy?
Not really, because there have been a lot of executive orders. There's not much time left, and there's really very little a lame duck president can do to make a difference to the economy. So there's really, I haven't talked to anybody that has an extreme concern about that. So I think that, you know, we'll go through a smooth transition, which is very nice for America. And then we'll see where we are. We still don't know who's going to be in the Trump cabinet. And until we know that, until we see the makeup of the committees, it's really hard to tell what's going to be next for the economy. And, of course, you know, there is a fortunate thing. And I think that this is nice for the country and it's nice for the incoming president. The U.S. right now has the strongest economy in the world. So you're starting with a good spot. And that's a position anybody would want to start with. You're not having to turn around a disaster. You know, our economy is growing more than 2% a year. A lot of economies around the world are shrinking. So I don't expect any lame duck actions. And, you know, we're going to have to wait and see which economic policies actually become reality to make a prediction on what effect they'll have on the economy.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see in the short term what actually is going to happen. I mean, already I think you would agree that internationally we're seeing folks kind of, I don't know how to describe, modulating where they are. You know, they're kind of waiting and seeing and looking. They kind of have an idea of where Trump's going to be with foreign policy. And obviously that in some corners it's creating angst, and in others they're very excited. We've already seen immigration impacted by some of what's going on in Mexico as it relates to folks coming to the border and people kind of disbanding and not heading here any longer. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, and we'll talk more about this later in the show, in this segment, about the German government, right, and what that ultimately means. And, you know, when you talk about the Ukrainian war, I mean, that this has a really far-reaching implication. And so why don't we get to a break, and we'll pick up the conversation there when we return. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back, folks.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, let's pivot to the German government collapse, why it matters. It's amazing how many similar issues that we've had to come to grips with here in the U.S., maybe a little bit more accelerated in Germany, but they're coming to grips with the same thing, and they just don't like it. Tell us about it.
No, times are tough right now in Germany, and it's one of those things we don't normally think much about in the U.S., but it actually is important. Germany was the strongest economy and has been the strongest economy in Europe for years. They built an economy based on exports, and they also built an economy based upon strong exports to China, investment in China sales, China production, and they entered into a period of instability recently. And historically, prime ministers like Angela Merkel were there for a very long time. But the alternative for Germany, which is described as a far-right party, got a number of votes. So Prime Minister Scholz, in order to put together a coalition, put together three people that don't normally get along. You had the Greens, the Social Democrats, and the Free Democrats. I've referred to in Germany as the traffic light coalition because each of those parties had a color. So you have red, yellow, and green, and obviously Greens being the green, Social Democrats red, and the Free Democrats yellow. These three parties were doing reasonably well until the German economy started to shrink. And what happened is China quit buying German cars, China quit ordering German machine tools, and so German export growth actually went negative. And the economic surplus that the parties had talked about using disappeared. You know, they had some leftover COVID money, and the game plan was, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to split it up in three parts. Social Democrats, you get more money for social welfare. Greens, you get more money for green stuff. And Free Democrats, you get more money to cut taxes. Germany's equivalent of the Supreme Court said, no, it violates our Constitution. The money can't be repurposed. And therefore, they had a financial squeeze. And suddenly, the prime minister was stuck because he had nothing to distribute. So for a politician, when you end up with no money to distribute, it's very hard to keep a coalition together. And so the Free Democrats, headed by Christian Lindner, dropped out of the coalition. They just said, well, we're done. We're not going to stay in this. And now Germany is going to have elections sooner than they thought. They would have come up in September. They'll now be in March. But the challenge for Germany is there's not enough money to do everything. The COP29 environmental conference is going on right now, and the Greens, of course, want more money. The turmoil in Ukraine is not getting better, and there are real questions about how much Germany will have to pay to support Ukraine or whether they will continue to support Ukraine. And then the Alternative for Germany party may make more gains. So it really puts Europe in a bit of a pickle right now and is very challenging for them to have a unified foreign policy when Germany is unstable.
How much of this is this net zero climate policy that they embarked on? You and I have talked about this many times, responsible for this series and sequence of events that we're seeing unfold today.
It's certainly part of it. And one of the challenges, it went back when Angela Merkel first brought the Greens into government. And, you know, Germany, like the U.S., has a strong environmental movement. And, you know, that's a good thing. You want the environment to be in good shape. But Germany has what we sometimes call and what have been described as environmental masochist. You know, any pain is worth bearing in order to reduce CO2 emissions. Now, the challenge is if you put the people into a position where voters are enduring a lot of pain, and then the voters look around the world and say, wait a minute, the world is still round, and China is increasing their CO2 emissions. India is increasing their CO2 emissions. Indonesia is increasing. And those increases have swamped our cuts. So we're sacrificing standard of living. We're colder in the winter. We're not air conditioning in the summer. You know, we're going through a real challenge. And it's not making a global difference because our trading partners aren't doing anything about it. And the challenge for Germany and the challenge for the Germans, the coalition, is China was the source of their export growth. China was buying the heck out of Mercedes, BMW, machine tools to make stuff. Well, China is also the globe's biggest polluter by far and growing. Opening more coal plants, financing more coal plants, producing more CO2. So the Greens are in a dilemma. What do you do when your biggest customer is also the biggest problem on your biggest issue?
But, Guy, I'm confused. I'm really confused because, allegedly, China's embracing the Paris Climate Accords. How can this be?
You have to remember, China also embraced Hong Kong democracy. One country, two systems. We're going to have a free press in Hong Kong. They signed the agreement. This is an agreement they made with their own people. China also signed the UN Declaration of Human Rights and then proceeded to oppress the Uyghurs. China also signed the UN Declaration on the Sea. And when the UN said, no, you don't own all of the South China Sea stretching from China all the way down to Indonesia, they ignored it. So if you look at China's history, they will sign agreements very happily and then ignore them. And same thing with the free trade agreement. They joined the World Trade Organization, you know, free and fair trade, and then proceeded to break the rules, steal intellectual property. And what they've done, and it's really pretty clever, they've said, we're going to be net zero 10 years after the rest of y'all get there. But we're a developing country, so we have to do a little more polluting in the meantime. So what the rest of the world is asked to believe is we're going to pollute now, and later, after you've all made sacrifices, then we're going to change our ways. And I'd say, you know, the classic fool me once, you know, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. We've been fooled four times in a row. And a lot of people want to believe that, but it's tough to believe that China will actually do anything about the Paris Accords based on their record with the other treaties that they signed.
So as we watch this going on in Germany, obviously this impacts us in a big way, right? I mean, Germany has been an ally to this country, although on some of the foreign policy issues, we've not seen eye to eye. And obviously, NATO's been one with the incoming administration, and Ukraine very much may be the next one, right?
Yeah, and it really, it's important for a free world to have a strong Germany. Germany is one of the leading economy in Europe. They're one of the leading members of NATO, and the criticism the U.S. has had is you guys have been freeloading and not spending enough on defense, and that's a legitimate criticism. They haven't come close to our levels of defense spending because they figured the U.S. would do it. Well, the challenge is we certainly don't want Putin to win in Ukraine. There's nothing in the world that would suggest that he would stop there. It's you have to draw the line. The sooner you draw it, the earlier you draw it, the better. But if Germany, France, Italy, the rest of the EU doesn't step up their spending to support Ukraine, there's a real chance the U.S. will say, well, if y'all don't care, we don't care. And that's right. That's the foreign policy dynamic that Putin is counting on. So I'm hoping that the Europeans will step up and say, no, this is too important. We can't let this guy take over a free country. We can't let him continue to bomb power plants, to bomb civilians, to use drones to literally, you know, hit civilians walking on the streets. But Germany's turmoil creates a problem. Interestingly, the Greens are one of the parties that actually favor support to Ukraine. So as they are losing votes, they're losing votes to a Alliance for Alternative for Germany. You lose a strong voice for support of resistance to Russia. And I think the Greens realize, and rightfully so, Russia is one of the worst polluters on the face of the earth. They absolutely could care less about CO2 emissions. They don't care about methane emissions. And they've used poison gas in Ukraine, which violates every international agreement on warfare. So the Greens do have a rational policy that, look, Russia's bad for the environment. But if Germany can't get their act together and form a new coalition, it really could be a challenge and could present some real problems. It's sort of like the run-up to World War II, where nobody wanted to do anything until it was too late, and then it was incredibly expensive in lives and money to deal with a tyrant.
All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. When we come back, we'll talk to Guy about why is your drugstore closing. We'll talk about that and more when we return. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, so why are our drugstores closing?
Well, there are a number of reasons, and I think it starts with, if you think about your last visit to one of the chain drugstores, a Rite Aid, CVS, Walgreens, how many people were there to help? And I know the one in my neighborhood, you're lucky if you can find a cashier and, you know, maybe there's one cashier and then eight people in line, and it really is frustrating. And over the last few years, we've seen a tremendous decline in drugstores. CVS has gone from has reduced by 900. Rite Aid actually went bankrupt and closed 500 drugstores. They're not closing all of them, but they're closing a bunch. Walgreens, 1,200 drugstores. So seeing a big decline in drugstores, and part of it is bad service, because drugstores make money in two ways. They do prescriptions, and then the front of the store is where you buy everything else. I mean, once again, our local drugstore, and I say local, the one in my neighborhood, it's not a local store, you know, sells candy, greeting cards, you know, food, every other thing you can imagine. Well, if the lines are long, people get frustrated, and they buy stuff like that on Amazon instead of at their drugstore. And then if the pharmacy lines are long and frustrating, people start going online. So we're seeing a shift in the way people shop, where they're not going into the store anymore. They're doing ordering things online. And there are a number of other things that are pushing this industry the wrong direction.
And from my reading of a lot of the closures, there seems to be a disproportionate number of those in low-income neighborhoods.
They are, and it's an unfortunate reality. You know, a long time ago when New Orleans built two public housing complexes, the Fisher and Florida housing projects, you had basically grocery deserts around them. You had retail deserts around them. And the reason is you concentrated very poor people in one place. Well, if you have a neighborhood of very poor people, there's no one with money to support the store. So when these drugstores are pushed from a number of other reasons to where they're not making money, you start closing stores where your sales are the lowest. You know, Tim Westfeld, who runs Walgreens, said 25% of our stores are unprofitable. So that tells you what the future is. And what's happening is we've talked about the retail theft, and you know, Walgreens, Rite Aid have all said it's particularly bad in California, New York, where they're not prosecuting it. That may change in California, where they passed a new law and said, you know what, that idea of decriminalizing retail theft wasn't such a good law after all, so we're going to get rid of that. So hopefully that'll make a good change. But if your merchandise is stolen, it's very hard to make money. The other thing that is not talked about very much are the opioid lawsuits. You know, no one was happy about the fact that people got addicted to painkillers, but blaming drugstores, I think, was probably a bridge too far. You know, someone had to write the prescription. I think you blame the doctors that are over-prescribing, but asking the pharmacist at a drugstore to say, well, maybe you don't need any more OxyContin, you know, you've gotten enough, I think is a challenge. Well, all of the drugstores were sued on this opioid issue. And even if you don't lose every suit, you have to mount a defense. And then you do lose some suits. Department of Justice sued Rite Aid and some of the other drugstores. So you're adding cost with no benefit. So a store that is challenged by reduced sales, challenged by theft, challenged by you know, shortage of workers, suddenly has lawsuits to deal with. So now you've got another brick that you're trying to swim with. And so it really is making it difficult. And we haven't even talked about the pharmacy benefit managers, which is something most people don't have any knowledge of, and it's understandable. These are the folks that actually set the reimbursement rates for drugstores. And the most disappointing part about that is pharmacy benefit managers buy the drugs at wholesale from the drug companies and tell the drugstores how much they're going to get reimbursed. And when I talk to some of our independent drugstores, the companies that are here in New Orleans that aren't affiliated with a national chain, they tell me that in many cases, they're actually reimbursed less than the cost. So yeah, That's why your independent stores are also going out of business, because pharmacy benefit managers have dominated that business and sometimes are reimbursing pharmacists less than it actually costs them to fill the prescription. So those are all things added together. So you think about theft, you think about opioid lawsuits, you think about pharmacy benefit managers. That's an awful lot to bear, and that's why so many drugstores are going out of business. And then as they try and deal with that by cutting staffing, then it makes the retail shopping experience a pain. I know when someone in my family says, would you mind going and picking up a prescription? My first thought is, yes, I really would mind, but okay, I'm going to do it anyway. I don't want to, but it's a pain. I don't want to wait in line, but I know that that's what's going to happen when I go to the store.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this ends, right? And I think a lot of folks went on this broad development phase with these retail outlets, most of them publicly traded companies trying to gain more and more market share, overpaid for real estate. That became a burden, right? And they found themselves quickly upside down in many
respects. Oh, yeah, I remember a decade ago where Walgreens, if they thought the opposite corner was better than the one they were on, would buy the opposite corner, pay a premium price, close one drugstore, and move across the street. And the thought was, if we get in the right spot, it'll work. So probably a decade ago was when it probably ended, but up until then, they were by far the best buyers. If you had a strip mall, you wanted a drugstore because they would pay top dollar. They were a good tenant. They attracted other people, a lot of foot traffic. But the challenge is you built in embedded cost that you can't get rid of quickly. You know, once you've signed that long-term lease, then you're stuck with that cost. And what the drugstores didn't anticipate is they were going to be faced with the theft challenge, the opioid lawsuit challenge, the reimbursement challenge, and all of those things pushed their margins down and made it more difficult to stay in business, which is why, you know, you've literally seen thousands of drugstores close because they're not profitable anymore. And now, you know, you have people like Mark Cuban setting up the online pharmacy where I'll deliver the drugs to your house at a reasonable price. And that's a value proposition that's hard to resist, but it makes it very difficult for the local drugstore.
So let's pivot real quick. We just have about a minute or so, Guy. Interest rates, you know, another 25 basis point cut, but mortgage rates are moving in the opposite direction.
They are. Unfortunately, the Fed controls the short rates. The mortgage rate is based on the 10-year Treasury. There's an expectation in the markets that the deficit will continue to be serious. Until we see the next budget, it's going to be hard to tell how serious the deficit is. I hope that it can be brought under control. But if it's not, mortgage rates really can't come down. And that's an unfortunate economic reality that every administration deals with. But we're going to be faced with that going forward.
And we'll continue to monitor that and talk about it right here with Guy Williams. Guy, as always, thank you so much for joining us today. Truly appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great week.
Oh, you're very welcome. Good to talk to you.
It's Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back, folks. We'll check in with Scoot when we return. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, let's talk about the Saints winning. That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
It was.
Yeah, I mean, it was so nice to see a different expression on the coach of the Saints. The guy had a different expression. He looked excited about something. So anyway, he had a lot to be excited about. LSU, woo, let's not even talk about that. Also, we'll talk about some things that people are anticipating concerning the Trump administration. President-elect Donald Trump is making some choices, and we got a lot of great music for veterans playing for our bumper music today, and we will celebrate Veterans Day.
Scoot's headed your way, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you again in the morning.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.